is Friday, in the second hour of our program, so it is my pleasure to be able to introduce I.Q. Al-Rasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. I.Q., welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I.Q., you sent me, I don't know if it was last night or this morning, an article that showed that the predominant number of banners and slogans being pronounced by those that brought the Muslim Brotherhood down in Egypt were not about mercy, were not about the Muslim Brotherhood. They were instead denouncing another individual. But that story is not being told in the United States. My guess is that story is not even being told in Europe. Who was the individual that the Egyptians were most denouncing and bemoaning?
Barack Hussein Obama.
That is correct. Amazing. Barack Hussein Obama.
Amazing.
Yeah, in fact, one of my favorite lines there, said, Obama, your bitch is our dictator.
Yep.
You know, it's...
There were thousands of them. It's not just one or two. They were all over Egypt, from Alexandria all the way to Cairo.
It's amazing, too. Listen to this news report, because the Obama administration has said almost nothing about one of the greatest political, and I don't mean great by the sense that this is good. I'm not putting an evaluation on it, because General Sisi is as much a fundamentalist Muslim as was Mohamed Morsi. There's nothing good about a military coup. But still, listen to Obama's reaction to what is one of the greatest acts of upheaval in the 21st century. So Mr. Obama released a carefully worded statement calling on the military to move quickly and responsibly to return full authority back to a democratically elected civilian government as soon as possible. Now, if you were to go back to a democratically elected civilian government, what would you have to go back to, I.Q.?
Morsi.
That's correct. And Morsi represents whom?
The Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Salafis, Wahhabism.
Yes, so what you've done there is you've actually answered my next question. What does the Muslim Brotherhood represent? Now, you used the term, you used the term Salafism. Could you explain for our listeners what is Salafism in Islam, what the term represents, what it means in Arabic, and what the term represents relative to the practice of Islam?
Well, the Salaf in Arabic means the companions of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
So Salafism is to go back to 1400 years ago, to the 7th century Muhammad Arabia. That means to go to Sharia.
Yeah, so
the Dark Ages.
Okay, what do we have? Is there a legacy that is preserved today of the words and deeds of the Salaf, of the companions of Muhammad? Is there anything that Muslims have today that can take them back there so that they are living their Islam in accordance with the companions of Muhammad?
Yes, Sharia. I mean, this is it. I mean,
and Sharia is based on
Muhammad. They were thugs. They were murderers. They were rapists. What were the companions? They were like Muhammad.
And we know this because the companions of Muhammad supplied us with oral reports, did they not?
Every single hadith is from the companions of Muhammad.
Okay, so if we wanted to know what a Salaf Muslim believed, what they were going to act upon, what behavior they were going to view as proper, halal in Quranic pretense, which by the way just happens to be the first name of Satan according to Yahweh, they would therefore follow the words and behavior of Muhammad and his companions as reported in the hadith. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Is there any way to be a Salaf Muslim, a fundamentalist Muslim, and not adhere to the hadith?
Impossible.
Okay.
Anybody who is a follower of Muhammad, anybody who says that he is a believer in Muhammad, has no choice but to follow the hadith and follow the Quran, which are the foundations of Sharia.
Okay, so and my conclusion, by the way, is that 99% of Sharia comes from the Hadith, not the Quran, but that there really is no distinction between the Hadith and Quran, and that they're both oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. That being the case, you mentioned that Salafism and in Islam, which is the basis of the Muslim Brotherhood, would cause someone to be engaged in some rather reprehensible behavior. You mentioned terrorism and murder and rape. Pedophilia might be another one of them, engaging in kidnapping, the slave trade. How do we know that Muhammad and his companions engaged in all of those behaviors?
They said so in the Hadith. They actually said so in the Hadith. This is what's remarkable about Islam. And this is the most sickening thing about the liberal-minded Westerners, whether in America or Europe. They never read the subject.
Right.
And they come to their own conclusion. They never read the subject.
When the Sunnah of Muhammad, as it's comprised in the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad, when you take the Hadith and you put them into the context of Muhammad's life to create a biography of him, and you read all of the statements that have been assembled relative to the life and deeds and words of Muhammad, what percentage of them do you find that are nurturing, uplifting, merciful, loving, and kind, even insightful in terms of coming to know who God actually is and engaging in a relationship with him, versus statements, hadith, that just show him being a pedophile, incestuous, a rapist, a mass murderer, a slave trader, a thief, a liar, just all-around perverted guy? What would you say is the relationship between those good, nurturing, uplifting hadith and the reprehensible hadith?
The uplifting hadith are zero. The murderous hadith are 100%.
So this is not a case of, boy, this guy IQ al-Rasuli, he's got a bone to pick with Islam, and therefore he has cherry-picked the worst of the hadith to form an errant impression, an errant interpretation of what it would mean to be a Salaf Muslim, is it?
No. I didn't choose, I didn't pick, and nobody can choose and pick because there is nothing to choose and pick. Each verse, each hadith is more vile than the one before or after.
Yeah, that's true. Now, the reason that this is important is that the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salaf political party, religious party in Egypt, is based entirely on this reverence for the Hadith and the Salaf, the companions of Muhammad. So the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salaf Party that garnered two-thirds of the votes in the last Egyptian election, they are the living embodiment of these very things we have been talking about, are they not?
They are.
In fact, if you were to try to find a group of people more in line with the Hadith of Muhammad's companions and therefore more Salaf than the Muslim Brotherhood, could you find them?
I don't think so.
Okay.
The tragedy is the Western mind has accepted that they are different names. Al-Qaeda, Salafis, Al-Wahhabis.
Yes.
They are different entities. They're not different entities. They're only different names of the same entity.
That is correct. That is the bottom line here, is that the Muslim Brotherhood is actually the parent of every Sunni Islamic terrorist organization in the world today. Every single one of them, from Hamas to the Aqsa Martyrs Brigade to Al-Jihad to Al-Qaeda the Islamic State of Iraq.
There are 500 different names.
All are derived from the same organization. I mean, can't you trace back the founding of every single Islamic Sunni terrorist organization to the same organization?
The same. The
It's the, right. In fact, even with Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda was first formed by a fellow who was a mythical person. He was in the sense that he called himself a Palestinian. He was brought up from the Muslim Brotherhood's PLO. The Muslim Brotherhood is conceived the PLO. They conceived Fatah. They conceived the whole myth of the Palestinian. And it was Azam who was a PhD, grew up in the Muslim Brotherhood, was a senior leader in the Muslim Brotherhood, that actually was the founder of the organization now known best as Osama bin Laden's organization. But it was actually founded by a fellow who got his PhD while being an advocate and a member of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Correct.
And almost every Islamic terrorist organization except Hezbollah, which is a Shia, was actually conceived by someone who was a leader in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Every one of them.
Now, so this is the thing that this is important is, the President of the United States said, move quickly and responsibly return full authority back to a democratically elected civilian government as soon as possible. That what was the properly elected, democratically elected government that you could turn back to if you were to do this? Would not that be the government of mercy and the Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood?
Of course.
So that's where he wants to go. So that's where he wants to go. Right. So that's exactly where the President of the United States wants Egypt to go, is back under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, why would anyone in their right mind want to subject people to the mother of every Islamic terrorist organization in the world today, save Hezbollah? Why would anyone in their right mind want that?
Well, he is in his right mind because he's a Muslim. He is one of them. Sounds outrageous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But even the Egyptians who were demonstrating against mercy knew that it was Obama who created mercy in the first place.
Now, it's interesting. This goes further. The president's announcement on the coup, the military coup in Egypt. He said that the military must avoid any arbitrary arrest of President Morsi and his supporters.
Yeah.
Is President Morsi and his supporters, would that not be sum total, the Muslim Brotherhood?
Of course.
So what the President of the United States is saying is you cannot arrest anyone from the Muslim Brotherhood. Why would he say that?
Because he's one of them. Because Morsi was his own creation. The whole of the Islamic movement in North Africa and the Middle East today were Obama's creation, single-handedly.
Given today's developments, Mr. Obama said, I have also given relevant departments and agencies to review the implications under U.S. law for our assistance to the government of Egypt. Now, we don't give assistance to the government of Egypt. We give assistance, $1.3 billion a year, to the military of Egypt, which General Sisi is dependent upon. Mr. Obama's statement, the senior administration official said on Wednesday, was calculated to give the Egyptian military a window to stabilize the country. But if it used the takeover as a pretext to further crack down on Mr. Morsi or the Muslim Brotherhood, he said, the president would use harsher words and raise the threat for cutting off aid.
With all due respect, I've had enough of Obama. It's about time the American people do exactly to Obama what the Egyptians did to Morsi.
Yeah, but you know what's amazing about this? Here's the President of the United States saying, I'm on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood. I am putting America on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood. I am in favor of the fundamentalist implications of Islam, which is to be a terrorist, to be a mass murderer, to enslave, to rape, to act as a pedophile, to be a reprehensive human being. To be a terrorist. That he is in favor of that, and the American people aren't saying, wait a minute, whose side are you on?
Nobody is asking the question. Not a single TV or radio station has asked this simple question. By the way, you said that the upheaval in Egypt was the most remarkable one in the 21st century. Not true, with all due respect. Never humanity have 31 million people in 2 days overthrew a government. Never. Not the Russian Revolution, not the French Revolution, not the American Revolution, no other revolution. 31 million people said no to the Muslim Brotherhood. This is remarkable.
It is indeed. What's interesting, of course, is that the person that did him in is more of a fundamentalist Muslim than Mercy. General Sisi is rotten to the core. He was chosen for that position because he is a fundamentalist. He's a Salaf Muslim.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What do you think he's going to do?
You know, in the world of Islam, it is always a matter of how evil they're going to be. As a matter of fact, the Muslim Brotherhood now is staging riots today. They call it the Day of Rage, perfect for their religion. But he's in a most difficult position because he is a fundamentalist Muslim. He was appointed by the Muslim Brotherhood. He turned on the Muslim Brotherhood. He is not going to turn on his religion. The emphasis yesterday was that the reason that he responded in this way is because the Muslim Brotherhood called a jihad and said it was obligatory for Muslims in Egypt to go wage holy war against Assad on behalf of the jihadist rebels in Syria, and that the army in Egypt had always been established to be the sharp end of the spear pointed at Israel, and they did not want to engage in Syria because they garnered their popularity in Egypt for being opposed to Israel. And so this is the justification for him responding. But in terms of what he is going to do, right now we've got window dressing. We've got him saying, you guys over here, you are going to be the heads of government, but you're all serving, of course, based upon me saying you can, which makes him a military dictator at the moment. But here's the concern I have, IQ. When last given the opportunity to vote, Egyptians, by a two-thirds majority, voted in favor of the most fundamentalist Islamic candidates. It's the same thing true every time Muslims vote now almost anywhere in the world. By a two-thirds majority, the most Muslims are now fundamentalists, and they vote in favor of the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate. That's the reason why in every country where we try to instill democracy, what we end up with is a government that replaces a secular dictator with an Islamic theocracy. How will the next vote be any different than the last one?
We don't know. Honestly, we don't know. I'll tell you why. The movement that overturned Mubarak in the first place, they were not Islamists. They were not Muslim Brotherhood. They were secular and liberal, so-called liberal Muslims. These people wanted democracy. And I honestly believe that this upheaval, they want democracy. They don't want Sharia. They tell you, okay, you are a Muslim. You believe in the Quran. You believe in Muhammad. Go to the mosque and do it. Don't bring it into politics.
Yeah, but you see,
Obama,
but the majority
Obama
of them,
Obama had the audacity to threaten the Coptic Christians, telling them not to vote and not to demonstrate against Morsi.
Yeah, of course.
I find Obama's behavior treasonous.
Yeah, of course. But the Copts only represent 9 to 10% of Egyptians, and the best guess is that the number of secular leaning Egyptians, those would be bad Muslims, would represent about 20% of Egyptians. So the most you get to in a popular vote is about 30% of Egyptians. That's about all you can get to. And so I don't know how you end up with a vote that is any different than what we have previously seen. You know, when Tunisia expelled, dethroned their secular dictator, the majority of the people voted for the Ennahda Party, which was the most fundamentalist Islamic choice. And in Libya, when the United States started to arm and abet the Islamic jihadist against Muammar Gaddafi, who was a syphilitic and insane, but nonetheless mostly secular, we got is a government by jihad. If they were, when we allowed one person, one vote in Iraq, and opposed the secular general, what we got is an Islamic government that is run and completely controlled out of Iran, out of Tehran by the mullahs. You know, when in the West Bank and Gaza, the mythical people known as the Palestinians were allowed to vote, they voted by a two-thirds majority in favor of Hamas. That's the record. You look at every time in the Islamic world over the last 20 years, you look at Turkey. The reason that there was no chance that the secular protest against Erdogan was going to bring him down was that two-thirds of Turks are now fundamentalist Muslims. And so when they vote, it's the tyranny of the majority. How is that going to be any different in Egypt? Unless the military decides that they're going to impose their control over Egypt and make it somewhat secular, as did Mubarak, how is it going to be any different?
I honestly do not know. I mean, the logic that you said, is the percentages that you talked about are correct. There's no doubt about them. But the movement that started with 31 million people objecting to having Sharia, this is not a joke. This is not a simple item.
Yeah.
They want Islam. We want, okay, we are Muslim, but we don't want Sharia to overrule our life.
Yeah, the issue, by the way, in the numbers are, there was an estimate that the number of people who, over the course of several days, protested was about 14 million people, which would be the number of Copt Christians plus secularists in Egypt. And that would represent approximately the numbers that we're talking about in terms of those who would be in favor of a secular government versus an Islamic government. There was also reports of a document of a referendum that was eventually signed by some 31 million people, which is what you're referring to here. But the likelihood that that is an accurate count, I think, and that there isn't exaggeration, is probably zero. And so I think that the real numbers are still what they have historically been, that we're dealing with about one-third of Egyptians wanting, craving, desiring freedom from religion, and two-thirds of Egyptians craving the religion. The day of rage is theirs. Welcome back to Shatteringness. I'm your host, Jetta. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, who is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. There is this tendency in the world, because we have corrupted the meaning of words, to believe that democracy is a good thing. I've talked about this often on the program, IQ, that democracy has really only two historical examples of any consequence. One was Sparta, which was the longest surviving democracy. It was an oligarchy where only those who had a vested interest in the society were allowed to vote. And it was amongst the most savage countries in human history. The other was the Delian League, which was imposed democracy by Greece for the express purpose of creating a buffer between Greece and the Persians. It failed because you can't impose choice. In America, our founding fathers were universally opposed to democracy. They called democracy mob rule, that it would be the tyranny of the majority over the minority. In America, we're witnessing democracy in the sense of wealth redistribution, of the minority demanding that the wealth and productivity of the productive be confiscated and given to the unproductive. And throughout the Islamic world, every time that democracy has been established, fundamentalist Muslims, who are the majority of Muslims by about two-thirds, have imposed a tyranny of fundamentalist Islam over anyone who is not a fundamentalist Muslim. I don't know why it is a good thing. Can you tell me why democracy is a good thing? Why another vote in Egypt will produce a different result?
If I remember correctly, it was Churchill who said, with all its warts, democracy is the best thing that we have.
Democracy is not, unfortunately. Democracy, if democracy was practiced as the term was originally conceived, it would have a possibility of succeeding. Democracy, the difference between democracy and a republic, is in a democracy, the individual has to be extraordinarily well-educated, and they have to be judgmental, because in a democracy, the individual votes for all legislation. In a republic, the individual votes for representatives who then create the regulation and the laws. In a democracy, the people themselves create the regulations and the laws. In a democracy, for example, the initiative process that we see in states like California, where the people vote for legislation, would have to be the totality of what the country does. The country could not go to war unless the people voted for it. The country couldn't have military spending unless the people said, oh, we'll give you this amount of money for your military. So that is what a democracy is. We don't have an example of that anywhere in the world. There is no place in the world where the people themselves are legislating. Not one.
It cannot be done because
no. That's right. Now, the other issue is that for a democracy to prevail, where the people actually legislate, the only way for it to prevail is for the people to be extraordinarily well-educated. And most people are indoctrinated today. They're not educated. They would have to be extraordinarily judgmental, discerning. Most people are politically correct, and so they avoid making good judgments. And the individuals would have to be moral in terms of being altruistic, and only those people who are net contributors to the society could be deemed responsible enough to make the rules in terms of how that society would be operating. And those conditions just don't exist.
Correct.
And they most certainly don't exist in an Islamic country where education of half the population is non-existent, women, and the education of the other half is nothing but wholesale indoctrination.
Correct. Again.
It's got zero chance of prevailing. The reality is that let's take a look at Syria. When Syria is currently it's a military dictatorship with Assad being in control. The majority of the Syrians now support the jihadists. Assad has on his side the minority, which are Shia Muslims and Christians, and probably some 10% of Syrians who are secularists. And so collectively, Assad probably represents 30% of the popular sentiment in Syria. So if there were a vote in Syria as to what kind of a government to establish, or if the rebels prevail, what kind of a government are they going to have?
Dictatorships.
Yeah.
Or theocracy.
Yeah, theocracy. Yeah, well, theocracy. And the theocracy, do you think that the fact that people vote in Iran, do you think that there's really a difference between the theocracy and the dictatorship?
None. Actually, none.
Yeah, actually none. And so that's what we would end up with. So I can't see a way out of this. I mean, the only possibility is for individuals like yourself to be given universal access to the media, to politicians, and to have politicians and the media all of a sudden change their stripes and be open to and receptive to the truth, and then based upon learning the truth, proclaiming it. But what do you think the likelihood is that you're going to be given the platform to proclaim this, or that those who give you this platform in the media, in state houses, in politics, will ever be convinced and motivated by the truth?
Zero.
So what we're seeing here is another upheaval. You know, the world rallied behind this great Arab Spring that materialized in Egypt with a popularly elected government, until they figured out, well, this popularly elected government is fundamentalist Islamic, the wellspring of terrorism around the world. And within a year of the time that it's elected, it collapses. Doesn't that tell you that there's something fundamentally incompatible with Islam and what we consider to be democracy?
Of course they're incompatible. They're diametrically opposite. So how can they be possibly incompatible in any way, shape, or form? It's impossible.
Right. Aren't some 85% of Egyptians Muslims?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So how do we? How would we ever expect this to turn out well?
In fact, it's very difficult to expect it to turn out well.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that that I saw in this upheaval is something I talked about a year ago, that when the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafis came to power in Egypt and were turning what was a secular dictatorship into an Islamic theocracy based on Sharia, that my concern was that the Muslim Brotherhood would impose their will, which is to turn Egypt directly against Israel, and would begin actively engaging in war against Israel. And according to the scriptural presentation, that really doesn't begin until 2026, 2027. And so I was saying, how in the world are we going to avoid World War III of a unified Islamic rage against Israel for the next 10 to 15 years with the handing over of Egypt to the fundamentalist Muslims? So I see this as just a hiccup in the road, a pace-keeping mechanism that slows down the inevitable. I think the inevitable is not something that we can avoid. Egypt is going to be in the hands of fundamentalists. It's just that for we have a respite. And our best hope is that Egypt remains a military dictatorship. That is really our best hope. The opposite of what Obama is calling for.
Well, Obama can call whatever he wants sitting in the White House. And after 5 years, he hasn't achieved a single item from his presidency. Not a single item came out of it.
No. And it the Obama administration, wasn't his first important speech at Al Jahar University, which is the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, and didn't he speak on behalf of Islam at the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, and thereby encourage Muslims to do precisely what they accomplished in Egypt?
He did, and he was lying through his rotten teeth during the whole of the speech. I listened to it, and my blood was boiling. I mean, he was lying. Exaggerating. Not a single item he said was true. Not one.
No.
I couldn't find a single item that he said about Islam which was true.
No.
That it is tolerant. It is intolerant. That it is peaceful. It is jihadi. It's not peaceful. That they gave something to civilization. They never gave anything to civilization. They destroyed civilization. They destroyed the Byzantine Empire civilization, the Persian Empire civilization, the Hindus, the Buddhists. They destroyed. This is why they are the most backward, the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history. 1,500 million followers of Muhammad.
There is it's difficult to come up with estimates for how many people the religion of Islam killed in its first 100 years. But following the Muhammad's claim to have become Allah's messenger, during the first 10 years of the Islamic era, Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids, and he killed thousands of people during those terrorist raids, and raped tens of thousands and enslaved tens of thousands in the first 10 years of the Islamic era through these 75 terrorist raids that he sponsored. But it was immediately after Muhammad's death that the great conquest of Islam began. And because the survivor, the winner, gets to write history, we really don't know how many people they killed. But what's your estimate of the number of people that the first Muslims, those who were intoxicated by Muhammad's poison, how many people do you think they killed in India, Hindus and Persians in what we call today Iraq and Iran? Byzantines, as well as those in Egyptians and those in North Africa. How many people do you think they killed in the first 100 years of Islam?
In Africa alone, 140 million. In Africa alone, 140 million. In India, over 110 million. And I'm not counting the Christians and the Jews and the Buddhists. We are talking about 300 to 400 million people in the last 1,400 years.
So what you're saying is that Islam has been more deadly than any other religion or political construct in human history.
Absolutely. No, in fact, there's no doubt about it. It's not even a matter of doubt about it. There's none. The records are there.
So why in the world would the President of the United States go to the heart of the Muslim Brotherhood and speak passionately and favorably about this religion?
Because he's a Muslim. I always said he was a Muslim. I never changed my mind. I will never change my mind. He's a Muslim. Doesn't matter if he says he goes to church. Which church did he go to?
Reverend Wright is anti-Semitic and is
anti-American. Right. 100% anti-American.
Yeah, in fact, Reverend Wright and Muhammad would have a lot in common.
Absolutely. But he was a Muslim before that. The pastor, so-called pastor, he was a Muslim before he converted so-called to Christianity. But in fact, what he was doing, he was double-crossing everybody. And for 17 years, Obama was listening to him and never got through to his thick head anything. Impossible. He was indoctrinated for 17 years.
Whether or not Barack Hussein Obama is a Muslim, a socialist, secular, humanist, or a Christian, whether all of those are beguiling doctrines of man, regardless of which one he has, shows an affinity to, and my sense is that he has an affinity to all three for different reasons. He was born a Muslim and was educated in madrasas early in his life, and identifies with the Muslim hatred of Christians and of Jews. In Christianity, he has an affinity for Christianity because that's how you become elected president in the United States. And he has an affinity for socialist secular humanism, which is why his governance is communist. I think he embraces all three, and he wishes to be the savior of the world. He wishes to be the person who ushers in a blending of those three human dogmas, and in so doing, he is a model for the Torahless one, and known to Christians as the Antichrist. While he is not himself that individual, he is certainly the prototype for him.
Whatever description you make of him, one thing is fact. He created single-handedly the Muslim Brotherhood to dominate the whole of North Africa and the Middle East.
He's
a Muslim, socialist, whatever he is. Yeah. His legacy is that he created a monster.
Yeah, he did.
He created a monster in the 21st century.
Yeah, he put America's energy behind the rise of fundamentalist Islam. Now, he didn't do it single-handedly. George Bush's invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, and his partnering with Pakistan, and his support of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, and his support of the mythical Palestinian causes, George Bush certainly put us on this course. What Obama did is accelerate it.
Yeah.
So America now is wholesale on the side of Islam as it rises its ugly head through this Islamic reformation that is taking place throughout North Africa and the Middle East. Now, there's a problem with an Islamic reformation. There's a lot of people who said, you know, Islam can be reformed, but the very term reformed means it goes back to its original formation. When we deal with an Islamic reformation, as we're dealing with throughout the Middle East right now and Northern Africa, we go back to the Salafs, don't we?
We go to the 7th century Arabia.
Yes. Yeah. So by reforming Islam, by Islam having a reformation, it goes right back to its past, where the first Muslims, like Muhammad, were slave traders, they were kidnappers, they were mass murderers, they were terrorists, they were rapists, they were pedophiles. We go right back to the most savage and uncivilized behavior ever recorded by man. We go right back to the time where Muslims killed 300 million people.
Easily. No problem. Yes.
So that is what the President of the United States put his energy behind. In fact, he even sold $100 billion worth of weapons to these Islamic regimes, did he not?
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
And at the same time, he has tried to do everything he can to undermine Israel, which is the only bastion of peace and civility in the entire region.
But not only Israel. He has undermined the whole of Christianity in the Middle East. Look, I come from Iraq. The Christians of Iraq are among the oldest communities of Christians in the world. They are the original Christians of the Middle East. They are Iraqis. They used to be 1.3 million in 2003. They are less than 200,000 today. He never raised a voice about them. He hasn't raised a voice about the Copts. He hasn't raised a voice about the Christians being exterminated in...
Oh, that's not true. That's not true. He has raised a voice about the Copts. He blamed the killing of the U.S. ambassador in Libya on a Copt.
And he told
the cops to stand down while Muslims in the Muslim Brotherhood torment them and oppress them. So, yeah, he has raised a voice, but his voice has been raised against them. But never once. Have you ever heard the President of the United States, either George Bush or Obama, speak on behalf of the Christians who are suffering genocide? On behalf of the regime that we empowered in Iraq? Or do you ever hear...
In 500 radio interviews, I am asked the same question in 500 radio interviews. Why are the American administration silent? Why?
Yeah.
I can't figure it out.
Well, let's look at Syria. From both sides of the aisle, including John McCain on the Republican side and Obama on the Democrat side, they're calling for aiding and abetting, arming the jihadists, the Sunnis, that are fundamentalist Salaf Muslims attacking the Assad regime. What is the Christian position? Are the Christians caught in the crossfire, or have they taken sides?
No, they are in the crossfire. The Christians will suffer no matter who wins.
Well,
they are a minority.
Yeah, actually, the Christians are not fighting. They really have taken sides. They are all...
They want to be with Assad.
Okay. Yes, of course, yes.
And
they recognize Assad's a very bad man. But the difference is that... Right, just like Saddam Hussein was a very bad man.
Thank you.
But the Christian...
A bad man, but he kept Iraq together.
Right,
today,
and...
Iraq is split into three parts.
Yeah, and also understand that while he was a bad man, Assad and also Saddam Hussein, that Christians were allowed to survive. You couldn't terrorize them. You couldn't kill them. You couldn't burn them alive in their homes. You couldn't ransack their churches while these secular dictators were in control. And the moment Saddam Hussein's secular dictatorship was removed from Iraq, what happened? Genocide, right?
Yes.
So why are the Christians in support of this rotten man, Assad? Because they know that if the revolution prevails, it's genocide.
Yes.
Why were the cops willing to risk their lives to stand up against Mercy and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? If they went along, what was going to happen to them?
Yeah, they would be destroyed.
That is correct. And so it's just astonishing to me, IQ, that Americans don't recognize that when they talk about arming the jihadists in Syria, when they talk about bringing back the democratically elected government in Egypt, that what they are doing is perpetrating genocide upon the Christian population.
Not only the Christian. It's genocide against anybody who is not Sharia-oriented. All those so-called liberals will be exterminated. In fact, most of them will end up in America as the refugees.
What happened in Turkey when the liberals, particularly the secularists and the military, didn't go along with Erdogan's Islamization of that country? What happened to them?
Many of them were either put in prison or executed.
Right. Hundreds of them. Hundreds upon hundreds of them were imprisoned and executed. That's exactly what happens. That's how Islam works. Anyone who is opposed to the fundamentalist interpretation of the Hadith, the Quran, the Sunnah of Sharia law, is silenced. They're either imprisoned or they're executed. And that's what this president.
They were murdered.
Yeah.
Execution is a legal term. There's no legality in Islam.
Did you watch the video that came out of Syria where three Roman Catholic priests were beheaded with a short knife in front of thousands of...
Correct. Did anybody say anything in the news media in Europe and America? The answer is no. Why?
No. And what were they all screaming and enraged as even the children and the women of thousands of them were watching these men's heads being cut off slowly and torturously?
Allahu Akbar.
Yeah. Confessing to the crime.
Of Islam.
Right.
Allahu Akbar is a terror verse of Islam.
Can you imagine a religion so poisonous that people can't make the connection that perpetrating a savage murder of men who have done no wrong? Those three men were simply trying to protect nuns from being raped by the jihadists. That cutting off their heads savagely in front of your children is doing a service to your God? Can you imagine a religion that perverted?
Well, because it is perverted. It's not a religion. You can call it a religion with all due respect. It's a cult belief system, the cult of Muhammad. Muhammad did the same thing to the young men and the old men of the Quraysh tribe. In one
yes.
night, 600 of them to 900 of them were exterminated. Same way.
And so the United States backs and supports a government in Egypt that was elected by the people who is in favor of that same kind of behavior. It's reprehensible.